Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Let's get the calls on Major League Baseball and the potential return and the impasse they're at right now. Let's go to James in Jersey. James, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Dave, Rick, Chris, good morning. Hope everybody's safe and your family too. I can make it as easy as possible. It's about time for the owners to kind of cave in and show some compassion, because the players always do it. And I realize that the public doesn't really look at it in a relative position about how much the players are making. But if anybody can afford to give a little bit more, it's the owners. And that's all I have to say. I hope you gentlemen have a good day.
Well, thanks for the call.
That's not going to happen.
Let's not pretend like that's going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. I don't think anybody is naive enough to think that that's going to happen. The owners are going to all of a sudden wake up tomorrow morning and have compassion over this whole thing.
No, I think you've already seen that. I mean, you've already seen, I mean, that last offer, I mean, that was just like the 50-50 revenue split was leaked, and then, you know, the smoking gun email was leaked, and now you have, you know, this current offer. I mean, it was meant to be disrespectful. I mean, it was meant to rile up the players and try to cause dissension within the union.
Well, they've done a good job.
Yeah, but I mean, the proposal that the owners have on the table this week is so far away from what should be seemingly fair in this situation, right? I mean, to do what they're proposing, to ask guys that are amongst the highest paid in the sport to take over a 50% pay cut on top of the prorated salaries that they were already proposing, I just think that that's a lot to ask the players to do. And again, I come back to, why should the players shoulder the burden, the financial burden of the pandemic, when the owners have more resources to be able to do that? Doesn't make sense to me.
No, I think there's going to be people agreeing with you. I really do, Chris. I don't think this is as 100% sided as it's been in the past. Let's find out a couple more calls. Matt in Fairlawn. Matt, you're on 98.7.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yep, go ahead, Matt.
I just wanted to call and state, and I agree with Chris 100%. I'm a fan. I'm a Yankees fan. But as times get tough, you know, people get tougher, and we need to come together right now as a country. And the owners have made plenty and plenty, millions and millions over the years. And the one year, you got to bend a little bit and give back, and you don't want to, and it looks really, really bad. And I agree 100%. It looks horrible. And everyone's got to live. We all got a livelihood. We all got to support ourselves. And the owners, they have stakes in other businesses as well, not even just their baseball teams they own. So I really don't feel bad at them for them at all. And I agree, the players deserve it 100%. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, Matt. See, Chris, I tell you, I think there's going to be more people on your side with this one than there ever has been. I think that the offer was just considered that disrespectful to the players yesterday. Louie at work. Louie, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, what's up, guys? Great show as always. And kind of just piggybacking off the last caller, just saying how I can't understand how the court of public opinion could possibly be in favor of the owners. You know, you guys touched upon before how most of the time people can relate to the ball players and not the owners. And in this situation, can't we all kind of relate to having a little bit of a jerk of a boss who, you know, doesn't want to give you the raise or something, or works you tooth and nail, but, you know, won't give you the overtime or something? So I think in this case, we should all be on the player side and not letting the owners get away with it, man.
But to your point, I think that most folks can relate to the player's position and being the employees and their corporation determining that they need to take a pay cut or they need to be fired. I think that's why the court of public opinion is against the players, because more Americans can relate to being in that position. And if they've got to deal with it, if they've got to submit to whatever ownership wants, then why shouldn't the players? And I just think that's an unfair ask for guys that are the best at what they do in the world.
I just feel this is the time that it's got to be some happy medium, and it doesn't feel like we're heading in that direction right now. Like, everyone's going to have to sacrifice, and it doesn't feel like the owners are willing to do that at this point.
Yeah, but how much of that is posturing, you think? I mean, how much is that just knowing that?
Lot.
I mean, there's
they've probably met and they probably have a drop dead. All right, guys, when it finally gets to it, we're willing to go here.
Yeah, I would imagine that's the case. I mean, if they really want to play, I mean, I'm sure that would be the case. I would hope that's the case because I think we all want baseball back.
We need it back.
We need sports, period.
Of course. Desperately. But I think Larry West Orange. Yeah, go ahead. Well, Larry,
no,
for a second.
Don't take the call. Let's take Larry.
All right, then. Larry and West Orange, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. I totally agree with Chris. I think the players are totally in the right here. I am a business. I'm paying my employees. It's a tough time for everybody, but, you know, the owner's got to suck it up and pay the players.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think everybody on the show agrees that that's what the owners should do, but that's not what they're going to do. And when you sit back and think about where baseball is financially and how much revenue they generated last year, in 2019, baseball generated $10.7 billion. Now, I know Rob Manfred is out there saying that they're going to lose $4 billion, but they're not really losing $4 billion. They're just not making as much as they did the previous season. In the times that we're in, I think everybody could understand if you're not going to make as much money because everybody is suffering a little bit financially. You would just want the owners to give a little more because they have more to give.
And what they've done diabolically is try to pit the players against each other, the players that make a ton of money and the players that make baseball comparatively very little money.
Which they always do. That's what they always do. And that's how they usually
it's diabolical.
Well, but that's, again, I mean, that's why, I mean, they own the teams and we don't. That's why they fly private jets into tarmacs and have, you know, meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we jump in Ubers.
Right. But if you're Garrett Cole or you're Max Scherzer, you look at the bottom line, you're like, wait a minute, I'm going to get $7 million, which is a ton of money. Nobody's arguing that, as opposed to the $37 million I'd get. But if you're Luis Guillorme, you're still going to get almost your full salary.
Exactly right. And 65% of the league makes, you know, a million or less. So, I mean, clearly, you know what they're trying to, like, what they're trying to do here. Like, we all get it. Everyone understands that. Here's the other thing, though, which the owners recognize, and it's tough for players when you know, when you get pushed to the brink of having to make that decision. I mean, I sat a whole season out. So whatever money I lost during that season, not to mention a year of my career, is gone. I'll never get it back. So I think partly what the owners count on is, okay, you're not making, if you're Mike Trout, the $37 million, but you're still going to make $9 million. Like, that's still $9 million that you'll never get back. So now it's on you to make that decision.
Right.
Are you okay with not making that $9 million? Because we'll find a way. Like, we can own these teams long enough. We'll get our money back. Like, as bad as it would be to lose a year, like, we'll eventually bounce back. You as an athlete, that's gone. That year is gone.
You have 12 years of earning potential. Now you have 11.
But, Rick, you say that about the owners, like they'll bounce back because they can own the teams forever. But will the sport of baseball bounce back if baseball decides they're not going to have a season?
Yeah, I think, I mean, hockey bounce back. Baseball will bounce back. Yeah. I mean, it'll take a while, but they'll bounce back.
But they're not doing great now. And then to take a huge hit.
Well, you say they're not doing it, but that's such a common misconception. What do you mean they're not doing good now?
We just established earlier in the show that this is the third sport in this country now.
Which means what? That the teams are worth, you know, $2 billion instead of $4 billion?
I'm not talking about how much the owners are making. I'm talking about the popularity of the sport.
But it doesn't, Matt, you can say that the popularity is waning and at some point, you know, because your average fan is so old that it could be a problem. But over the last decade, it hasn't been a problem. And baseball hasn't been the most popular sport. These franchises every single year go up and up and up. And they're not at the level of the NFL. We all get that, or the NBA. But they're still doing pretty damn good.
Well, because they have strength in numbers. They play 160 games.
Okay, and people still want to put them on television. They still get national television deals. They still get humongous regional television deals.
And that'll never go away.
Okay, so, but that's the fugazi part of this whole thing that the players can't stomach, is that you got teams making, you know, $1.5 billion a year on local TV revenues, and they, you know, well, you know, we'd like to have people come to the games. That'd be great because we'd make even more money. But, you know, it's not the biggest part of our business. Right? Like, people showing up is not the majority of the money that baseball's making.
No, the TV revenue is the biggest part of their business.
Okay.
So, yeah, these teams are making hundreds of millions of dollars. There's no question about that. Like, even the lowest value teams are making a lot of money on these local television rights deals. I guess my only question is, will the sport bounce back if they don't come back in the midst of what the country is dealing with? Because this feels like it's different than any other potential work stoppage that baseball has ever faced. And that's the one question that we wouldn't have an answer to. It's a hypothetical that's being floated out there, but I can't imagine that it's going to be received very well by casual sports fans and diehard baseball fans alike.
No.
I think this is something that people would not forget. Like, when all the other sports did everything that they could to try to come back to be a welcome distraction for a lot of Americans because we were dealing with a pandemic, baseball wasn't there for us. And I don't know that's one of those things that's easy to get off the mat from.
I think you have a lot of damage if that happens. A lot. Because 94, which a lot of people, and yes, it got back to 100% what it was, but 94 people look back on and they're angry about. And the country wasn't going through what the country's going through now. If there's no baseball, and I'm not even taking sides, if there's no baseball, I think people will become incensed about it.
Yeah, and I don't blame them, Dave, because you would think that millionaire players and billionaire owners would be able to figure out the economics of it in order to do what's in the best interest of the country. You know, there's a reason why all the politicians are coming out and saying that we're going to allow professional sports teams to resume training camps and ramp up activities. It's because they understand how important sports is to the fabric of our society. They get it. And for baseball to not show awareness and to be tone deaf to everything that's going on, that's a black eye for the sport.
It may be a black eye for the sport. I mean, we have short-term memories, though. I mean, we're sitting there clamoring for sports. We're breaking down, you know, charity golf matches, and, I mean, you name it. We'll break it down. We'll watch it. You mean to tell me that the diehard baseball fan, okay, you're upset in the moment, but, you know, come the start of next baseball season when there's nothing on television that you're not going to watch baseball?
No, but is the diehard ever up for question? The diehard's going to stay up till 2 in the morning to watch the game. The diehard's going to watch Edwin Diaz blow games in
exactly
LA,
right.
You know.
Right. Exactly
so the
right.
Diehard's
guess
not,
what?
The guess diehard what? Guy's
and
not
guess
ever
what?
Up for debate.
And guess what? They're doing all right with just the diehard fans at the moment. Would they like to build the game? They absolutely would. But they still do have the safety net. The people that love baseball, that are the majority of people that consume baseball, will still be back next year, too.
I agree with that. But you know what? Maybe 5 years they take a hit. Maybe 10 years.
That's what I'm talking about, Dave.
You know, horse racing used to be the number one sport in the country, too.
So you're going to compare horse racing to
Major League Baseball? No, I'm just saying. Times change. Eras change. You know, 50 years ago, baseball was unbelievably popular. And it's not at the same level right now. I'm not saying financially that they're ruined. They're in great shape. They make a fortune of money. But I'm not talking about the finances of it. I think it's bigger than that. And the popularity of baseball is not what it's been in the past.
And at some point, the economics of the sport will reflect that.
$10.7 billion.
Well, yeah, you're right. $10.77 billion in 2019. But at some point, as your fan base continues to get older, if you don't appeal to a younger demographic, if you don't make new fans of the sport, the economics of the sport will drastically change. And that's the part of this that I think that both sides are being incredibly short-sighted about. But the players, I understand it. The players can't play forever, so I get it. They're concerned about getting theirs right now. But with the owners, because they can own these teams forever, they have to think about the long-term implications of not playing this season and whether or not the strategy that they're taking with the players is one that's going to benefit them long-term. That's all I'm saying. I don't think people would forget about it if baseball didn't come back this year. Now, you might have fans return. I'm not arguing that point with you, but I'm just talking about in terms of making new fans and growing the game. What you're doing right now is detrimental to that.
I don't disagree with you in the moment that it's detrimental, but I just have a hard time believing that, you know, long-term baseball wouldn't bounce back.
Well, hopefully we don't have to find out, because if we do, people are going to be angry.
Yeah, people will be angry in the moment. Yeah, they'll be outraged initially, but then, I mean, they'll get over it and they'll go back. Just like once this whole thing is like, once we're, you know, a couple months more into this pandemic, you see less and less masks and everything else. People have short-term memories.
Very
yeah,
short-term
so,
memories.
I mean, you'll be pissed in the moment, but you'll go back. I'll go back. You'll go back. Canty will go back. And then they'll find new and inventive. new and innovative ways to try to speed up the pace of play and recapture the younger fan.
Paul in St. James. Paul, you're on 98.7.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
We're good.
So my issue is with the owners. You know, when I remember when I was a kid, we did make a lot of money. We were a working-class family. We were able to go to a baseball game and, you know, go to get box seats for games. Now people today, they can't do it. They can't. They're not able to go to a box seat to a Yankee game, normal blue-class, blue-collar people. And, you know, the owners started raising ticket prices. Then the baseball players started getting wise to it, so they wanted more salaries. And the owners just kept on giving out. Like, look with Texas with Alex Rodriguez. They had they spent so much money on Alex Rodriguez, then they try to get out of the contract. These guys are ridiculous. They want their cake and eat it, too. They want to pay all these guys all this money. And then, you know, once that now we're having this problem with all going on, they just pay the guys. Let them play. Let people like us enjoy, maybe watch a baseball game, who are stuck in our homes and can't get out.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They don't, I mean, as much as you want to believe that the owners care about you getting the opportunity to watch a game because you're stuck at home, they don't care about that.
No.
I mean, they could get away with, I mean, Arthur Blank's doing it in Atlanta, charging less for concessions. They can still make a ton of money and not gouge you with prices, but they make the decision because they know you'll keep coming that they're going to be hogs about it because you'll keep paying. But that's what they do. I mean, how much money is Atlanta making? Are they hurting for money?
No.
Now that they've lowered concession prices?
None of these teams are hurting for money. But he's right. They price a lot of the average fan out of going to these games now at this point.
Because they can. I mean, how many times have you sat on this radio station, on this show, pounding your chest? Well, if you want things to change, don't watch. Don't show up. Well, people still show up, so nothing gets changed.
They do.
So you can go, I can take Milo to a hockey game and pay, you know, pay $8 for a Dasani water. And if I want to get it, I think it's $7.50 if I go up and get it. And then if I want to sit in my seat and get it, then they charge me $8 for it. And then $12 for a pretzel.
Which is insane.
Like, you got to charge me $12 for a pretzel?
How much do you think a Dasani water costs? How much do you think it costs?
$1? Probably less than a dollar in bulk. How much is a pretzel?
75 cents?
How much does a frozen pretzel cost that I'm paying $12 for?
Probably 50 cents?
Maybe. I would say less than 50 cents.
I mean, it's awful. If you think about the amount that they mark it up, it's disgusting.
Yeah, and the players that generate the most revenue, the A-Rods, I mean, the Gerrit Coles, they're the most, the men will get paid the most money because they generate the most money for the owners.
Which makes sense. I mean, the better players should get the most money.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the economics of it, though. Like, you can sit here and blame the players for making all this money. Well, if the player makes, you know, if Mike Trout makes $37 million a year, now owners are going to have to raise ticket prices and charge more money. No, they don't have to do that. They choose to do that because they know you'll keep paying those prices.
Well, the fans are always there. You buy the stuff. You go to the game. So why would they not?
I mean, there's a reason why, you know, Peyton Manning gets all these endorsement deals. Why? I mean, because by signing Peyton Manning to an endorsement deal, he's generating more money for you than you're actually paying him.
Yes. Yes.
So exactly right. So, I mean, I can stomach giving Mike Trout all this money because I know how much money he's bringing back in return. Because he makes us relevant because we have the best baseball player on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Owners don't just give money away willy-nilly because they want to.
No business. Any respectable business that's run somewhat well doesn't give money away without getting a return for it.
And here's the thing. And this is why the players in this situation have some leverage, because they do have guaranteed contracts. There's no risk of the players with the most amount of sway. They're not going to get fired. They're not going to lose their jobs. Like, people that call in with the comparison, well, I had to take a pay cut. Well, here's the harsh reality. You had to take a pay cut because if you didn't, you're find gone. Someone else to do your job.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're not going to find another Mike Trout or Gerrit Cole.
No, they're the best players at what they do in the world. In the world,
that's
Craig.
The only reason. But that's the only reason why NFL gets away with non-guaranteed contracts. Because guess what? If you don't want to play, we'll find someone else that will.
That's right. That's right.
That's not the case in baseball. I mean, that's it. That's the harsh reality of it.
Yeah.
It's not an apples to apples comparison.
No, baseball is different because it's guaranteed.
I mean, we took pay cuts. I mean, you, part of that is because we want to do the right thing. We want to keep as many people employed at the station as possible. But there's also the fear that they'll find someone else that'll do our job for us. We're not indispensable. You want to be the guy that says no?
You can't be the guy that says no.
Yeah, because, I mean, we could all be replaced. I don't think Mike Trout is concerned about being replaced, or Max Scherzer or Bryce Harper about being replaced. That's not their reality.
No. And in actuality, they can't be replaced.
Exactly right. That's why they get paid.
They have guaranteed deals. Even if you wanted to replace them, you couldn't.
But that's why they get paid what they get paid. Because you can't find guys to do what they do.
Not at that level. And in these trying times, important to remember, we'll pull together as a community. Small business all over going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com and let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. All right. This is a really upsetting story. I'm sure you've all seen it by now. George Floyd being killed, really, by the Minneapolis police officer, pinned him down, couldn't breathe. For minutes and minutes, the video is all over the place right now, and it's disturbing and it's sad. It's elicited a ton of response, and the world of sports has gotten involved. And LeBron James posted a photo of himself wearing the "I Can't Breathe" T-shirt yesterday, I guess, in response to the death of George Floyd. And I mean, it's a big conversation starter. And Chris, I mean, the one thing you could say about LeBron, and you could not say about Michael Jordan, is if there is injustice that he sees, he will absolutely unequivocally take a stand on it.
No, and I love LeBron James for doing that. And he posted the graphic on social media a couple of days ago when all of the news first came out. And it had a picture of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. And then it had the officer from the Minneapolis Police Department having his knee on George Floyd's neck. And it talked about, this is why Colin Kaepernick took a knee, to stand up against social injustice, police brutality, and things of that nature. And so, just the juxtaposition from that graphic, you know, it says a lot. It speaks volumes. And unfortunately, we're at a point in our country where we're not past racism, and we're seeing that at an institutional level somewhat with the continued murders of unarmed black men at the hands of law enforcement. And Dave, something's got to change. I mean, we keep talking about it, whether it's Alton Sterling or Philando Castile, and now George Floyd. Something has to change. Tamir Rice, something has to change. And until you know, everybody stands up and rebukes what happened to Mr. Floyd, and we actually start to hold officers accountable for doing things like this, I think we're going to have incidents like this continue to happen. And that's just not a reality that I want to live in.
Well, it's awful. I mean, it's disturbing. It's heartbreaking. It emotes anger from it. And I actually love, Rick, the fact that, you know, one of the most famous athletes on the planet takes a stand and will not be quiet about this issue right now.
I think we all do. And that's, I mean, something that LeBron James is more than happy to, well, he's great at it, but he's more than happy to do it. I mean, he wants to be involved. I mean, he wants to stand up for what he believes is right. And, you know, it was one of those situations for me. I almost actually called Chris at the time when it happened. Cassie and I had to sit down and really talk about it and try to explain it. So what Milo does now is when he wakes up and he'll come downstairs is now he knows how to use the remote control. So, you know, he'll throw on a show or whatever he wants to watch. And then, you know, when he's done or he's going to eat his breakfast, he changes the channel back and he goes to the news because he thinks Cassie wants to watch the news. And she actually came up and got me and said, you know, Milo just saw what happened and asked me, why are they doing this? And she had no idea what to tell him. Like, Mom, why won't they get off him? And she's like, what do I tell him? I don't know.
How do I explain it to him? But don't you try to tell him the truth?
Yeah, you do, but he's 5 years old. Does he comprehend the truth? Like, he has no idea. Like, he doesn't know the difference. He doesn't know what racism is. As far as he's concerned, I mean, like, when Canty comes over, he's not black or white.
No, I know what you're beautiful.
He's Uncle Canty.
Right.
And Canty's 6'8", rolling around on the floor wrestling with Milo. That's like, he loves Canty. He has no idea. So we have to have a talk about it. Like, what do we say to him? How do we explain this to him? And after you watch the video, I mean, how do you explain what happened?
You can't
explain
it. You can't. I mean, Chris, you know, I mean, the only way you can explain it is just rampant racism.
No, it's racism, and what happened on the video was murder. Dave, you said, you mentioned it, I guess you weren't really thinking about it. You said that he was killed. No, he was murdered. He was already in handcuffs. He was restrained. All the videos that have come out to this point show that George Floyd wasn't resisting arrest and that the actions that the police took were not something that, you know, law enforcement training teaches them. It's not. I mean, there's a reason why the Minneapolis Police Department reacted as quickly as they did. They fired him the day after the incident took place because they recognized what happened. They saw the video and they know that that's so beyond what law enforcement is supposed to do in those situations. I got a buddy of mine that works for the NYPD. His name is Shane Jacobs, and he posted something on social media. And I reached out to him this morning, and I asked him, is it okay if I shared what he posted because I think it's important. He said that in his post, I'm not one for politics or even publicly expressing my thoughts and opinions on things, as I've always shed light on things when I'm asked. But this whole incident is truly disturbing to me. George Floyd died a slow and gruesome death. People are shot all the time, and this man had to bear the agony of, one, fighting for air, and two, knowing he was going to die. Imagine the fear going through his mind during all of this. He was told to get up, and I'm not sure if anyone has ever been rear handcuffed, but it's very difficult to get up while restrained. This whole incident was so poorly handled, and there was a complete lack of concern for human life. And the price that has to be paid, every cop in the nation is portrayed in a negative light all because of the actions of one. This is a profession that is always under the microscope. It bothers me that this officer didn't consider this man's life. 3 minutes in and this man was in limbo and did nothing. I truly hope that justice is served. And coming from one officer, I can honestly say that the actions of this one do not properly reflect that of 90% of cops. As pissed off, upset, and disgusted as many people are, just know that all good cops out here feel the same way you do. That's what he said, Dave.
Yeah, it's well written, eloquent stuff, and he's right.
Most people that saw that
were horrified and disturbed by that video. I mean, it's an awful video.
It's an awful video, Dave, but I think that everybody has to recognize that we all have to use our voices and stand up and rebuke those types of actions that lead to those types of outcomes from law enforcement. We have to. And I'm not saying that police officers don't have a tough job. They absolutely do. But what those officers did on Monday to George Floyd makes it even harder for officers that are doing the right thing. It makes it harder for them to do their job because they're interacting with communities that trust them less and less.
And rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it, Dave. I mean, if you're a young black man, why would you trust law enforcement to protect and serve you? Why would you?
Based on everything
that we've seen in the past, you know, 3-4 years, why would you do that? You wouldn't. And I guess with the technology and camera phones, we're seeing these videos come out, and it's just hard to digest it. It's hard to process it, and it puts you in a place where you feel like you have no choice but to be adversarial toward law enforcement, where their job is to protect us. Doesn't feel like that's what's happening.
But we hear more outrage
about Colin Kaepernick taking a knee before a game than we do about these things that are happening when people are losing their lives. I guess that's the point that LeBron James was trying to make, and I 100% feel him on that one.
Well, which only makes it worse for the good cops.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's now an inherent lack of trust. Like, so going into a situation knowing that, okay, you know, you don't trust me, I don't trust, like, it just makes for, you know, these incidents happening way too often. And I don't even know if there's words to describe how I felt watching that video. I don't know if there's strong enough words.
Oh, you watched the murder.
Yeah, but I wanted to, I originally, going through Twitter, I think it was Taylor Twelman's tweet. Taylor Twelman's tweet, and he tweeted the video, and like I forget what it said, but it insinuated that this man was killed. And I was like, there's no way. This can't be. And I watched the video. And I'm still watching the video. I'm like, get off of him. What are we doing here? Get off of him. Get off of him. And then it's over. And you're like, did that really just, you couldn't believe that you just saw that.
No.
You know what I mean?
Because he was subdued. I mean,
but it's
no
the definition of senseless.
There was no reason to continue doing what was done. None.
He wasn't by himself either. The cop was not by, the cop actually
had. There was two cops right next to him.
And the guy's not moving. He's like, just get off of him. He's already in here. Get off of him. Just get off of him. And he's just, even thinking about it now makes me want to.
You can't make sense, but Rick, you can't make sense of it because it's senseless. So there's no point in even trying to rationalize it. We have to recognize it for what it is, which is that prejudices and biases of that one officer, essentially racist behavior from that one officer, cost someone their lives. And just because he wears a badge does not make it any different. He murdered that man.
Just makes me sad, man.
He was on his neck for 9 minutes.
It makes me sad for my. It makes me sad for my kids and for your kids and for Canty's kids, just because I see how. I mean, at my kids' age now, and how they interact with classmates, how he interacts with Canty. I mean, that's, you're not born like that.
No, you're not. Just the opposite.
No,
you know what I mean.
You're right,
Rick. And it's beautiful, man. It's special. Like watching him on the Zoom. I mean, the school he goes to, he's got, you know, all races, all ethnicities, and it doesn't matter to him. It's his boys. It's his buddies. He doesn't care where they're from, or you know what I mean. Like it's just he loves all of them, and he misses them every single day. Like he lights up every time he sees them on the camera, and it doesn't matter to him. And it shouldn't matter to him. But it's a
learned behavior, man. Of course,
the point is it's a learned behavior. Someone has to teach you to be like
that. No, it's not a gene. You don't have the a chromosome which says I hate people of different colors or ethnicities or races. This is something that is learned behavior.
No, it absolutely is a learned behavior. And Dave, one of the things that happened when Colin Kaepernick decided to take the stance that he did is we recognized why he was doing it. You know, he was trying to raise awareness for issues that were going on in minority communities, to be a voice to people that are voiceless. But I feel like we're at the point now in our society where we're all aware of the things that have been taking place over the last several years. We know that unarmed black men have been killed by law enforcement. We know about what happened with Walter Scott down in Charleston, South Carolina. Like we know about those things. We saw about what happened in Alton Sterling in Louisiana. We saw those things. It's not like we don't know that they're going on. It's just a matter of whether or not we're willing to do something about it. And Dave, I got to tell you, I want to be optimistic about it. But after hearing about what happened to the man in Central Park that was bird watching,
which was
disgusting. And the woman decided to weaponize his blackness against him and call the police. That's the type of stuff that scares me. Because it lets me know that white people are aware of it. And not only are they aware of it and they're not doing anything to try to fix it, but you have the audacity to try to weaponize it against black men. How scary is that? It's terrifying. And that's why I'm saying we all have to play our part. We all have to do more. Whatever you think you're doing, you have to do more. You know what? I appreciate Peter Rosenberg from the K-Show. Because last night he went on IG and he talked about it. And he said, if you saw what happened to George Floyd and you weren't disgusted, I mean physically sick, then you are a part of the problem. And right now, every American should check themselves. Because if you consider yourself a patriot and you love this country, then you need to stand up against what happened to Mr. Floyd this week.
Very well said. All right, let's take a listen to Jay Williams' first take. Discussing LeBron and the fact that his willingness to speak out makes him the GOAT.
When we consider the greatest of all time, this is why I think LeBron James is the greatest of all time. I think that the lack of willingness of Michael Jordan to speak out brings me to the ultimate conclusion that LeBron James putting his career in jeopardy to speak out about things that he feels are personally relevant to him and about where we are. And I do feel like LeBron James has had some mishaps. He's had some missteps, but ultimately you feel like he is on the path. And once again, this is subjective and this can cause people to be divided. I understand that. And Michael Jordan didn't divide people at that time as far as it relates to political things, but I do like the fact that LeBron LeBron stands up and speaks out on the injustices that are happening in the world. And when I look at guys, when we talk about greatest of all time, I think about Muhammad Ali, I think about guys like Jim Brown, and I think about guys like LeBron James. Was Michael Jordan maybe the greatest basketball player skill set that we've ever seen? Yes. Yes. In championships? Yes. But ultimately, when I talk about the greatest of all time, it's about, are you transcending and being, standing for something bigger than yourself? Bigger than yourself, bigger than your sport, for things that are happening in our world. And for that being the theme, LeBron James is the greatest of all time. In that regard, he is.
Interesting take. I don't know that I agree with it, Chris, but it certainly is an interesting take from Jay Williams.
Yeah, I don't agree with it from the standpoint of, you know, criticizing Michael Jordan for not speaking out. I mean, to do what LeBron James is doing is exceptional. And I like I said, I can't say enough good things about LeBron and how he's tried to use his platform to affect others in communities that aren't represented the way they should, or communities that don't have the resources, underserved areas. I appreciate what LeBron James has done with his platform. But that's, you know, if Michael Jordan didn't do that, I have to assume that he didn't feel comfortable doing that. And that's why I'm not willing to go as far as to criticize him for it. But I mean, listen, this does add to the greatness of LeBron James. There's no doubt about it. I mean, him being willing to put himself out there and, you know, not care about the opinions of others and not care about how it affects his bottom line, to take a stand for something that he believes in, something that he thinks is right. How could you not applaud him for that? This is literally putting your money where your mouth is.
I think you have to. I think, you know, to kind of disagree with you a little bit, I think a lot of people look down on Michael Jordan. And I think a lot of the African-American community look down on Michael Jordan for not ever taking a stand with anything and just, you know, playing it straight right down the middle every single time.
Well, that's fine. They can do that, Dave. I'm not going to do that. I mean, yeah, would it have been great if Jordan, because he had the world in the palm of his hands, would have done more to try to help minority communities? Yes, it would have been great, but he didn't do that. And Dave, I don't know that he didn't do that because he was overly concerned with his individual bottom line, or whether he didn't do it because he was just not comfortable doing it. Like, I can't ask somebody to be comfortable with something they're uncomfortable with. That's something that we don't have the answer to. But what I can tell you is I do know Michael Jordan does a lot of charitable work in the Carolinas. I do know. I've been at events that he's put together to try to raise money and raise awareness for, you know, certain social causes with underserved communities. So I'm not going to say that Michael Jordan doesn't do anything and LeBron does everything. That's just not true. It's just that LeBron is comfortable taking a stand and being vocal about the things that he's passionate about away from basketball.
All right, let's take a call or two on this. Mike and Comac. Mike, you're next up on 98.7, buddy.
Guys, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Mike.
I don't know if the screen I told you. So I retired from the New York City Police Department after 23 years last year. And I join everyone's outrage in what they saw in that video. I found myself yelling at the TV after obviously it was all over. What are you doing? Get off that guy. What are you doing? And his partner is just as culpable because he did nothing. You know, if God forbid I ever saw someone I was doing something like that, I would.
I think there were three other police officers that were right there.
Right, but I only saw the one guy on the camera. So I found myself yelling at the TV, and I just couldn't believe it. And I knew what the national outrage would be because of it, as it should be. And I joined LeBron and everyone else in their outrage. My only problem is LeBron's words when he says we are being hunted. Me personally, this is my own personal opinion, I disagree only through my lens because I worked 23 years on the street my entire 23-year career. And I thank God every day I never had to deal with something like that from someone I worked with or anything like that, and I thank God for that. But when he says that, I think he's putting police officers at risk. I join him in his outrage. I agree with everything he said. It's murder. There is no question. And in every bunch, there is a bad apple. And clearly, this guy was a bad apple. But he does not represent the 99, I'll go over what Canty said before and his friend said 90%, 99.9% of police officers in this country are hardworking and do their best and represent the badge honorably. But this guy was the bad apple. And unfortunately, in some incidents like this, you see the bad apples. Kate referenced the guy in South Carolina. 100%. That guy was a murderer. What he did was ridiculous. He shot the man in the back. I will disagree with Alton Sterling. Alton Sterling was violently resisting arrest and had a gun. Okay? So things happen. Okay? Alton Sterling certainly was not Floyd by any means. Floyd was restrained, on the ground, restrained, not offering resistance.
And it was over. I mean, Mike, it was over, right? I mean, you're a police officer. You can't deny the fact. I mean, the guy was completely subdued.
And there was always a rule that if guys were uncuffed and they were resisting, we got to do what we got to do to get a guy in custody. This man was in custody, not offering resistance. He was murdered. I agree. Alton Sterling, if Canty wants to review that again, was violently resisting loose and had a gun. Again, what I'm saying is that over the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of contacts police officers have with people per day in this country, yes, incidents happen, but they are so few and far between. What I would also tell you,
how many is too many? How many before you take a stand and say it's not okay?
You are 100% right, but unfortunately, in the police business, you have incidents where there is conflict, and you don't know what's going to happen. Bad seeds show themselves.
But Mike, explain it. Hold on, Mike, explain this to me, because you brought up Alton Sterling, and I want to go there. And if my memory serves me correctly, the law enforcement officers were on top of Alton Sterling when they shot him. He was on the ground. They were on top of him when he shot him. Now, try to reconcile this for me. A young white man goes into a church in Charleston, South Carolina, and kills 9 black parishioners. And the police are able to apprehend him and take him into custody without killing him. Explain that to me. That's the visual. But I'm just trying to give you the backdrop for how we see it. That's how we see it. With all the videos that have come out with Tamir Rice and with Philando Castile, you're saying 99.9% of officers are doing the right thing. I'm not disagreeing with you. But the few bad apples that you have are undermining your credibility in black and brown communities, which makes your job harder, which makes your job more dangerous. There is a problem right now that law enforcement is facing. And we've got to deal with the bad police officers in order to, one, make sure that when communities are being policed, that they're being policed fairly, but also to make sure that police officers make it home at night too.
Absolutely.
We're trying to solve the same problem.
That was part of my thing. I don't see any outrage from anybody when a police officer was killed. 148 police officers were killed in the line of duty, including 48 by gunfire in 2019. I don't hear anybody. I don't hear you guys. I'm not tripping on you for that, but I don't hear you guys. I don't hear LeBron. I hear nobody coming on outrage because it's an expected part of the job in a lot of people's eyes. 148 police officers killed in this country in 2019, and 48 by gunfire alone. And no one mentions that. No one cares.
And that's not true. You think no one cares?
I think, you know, I shouldn't say don't care, but you don't hear about the outrage. You never hear LeBron going on social media and say, hey, you know, 2 police officers were killed in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn sitting in their car by some guy who came up and blew their brains out. You don't hear him say that. You don't hear
Mike, you might say that. I just recorded a video to send to a young man who lost his father in the line of duty a couple of weeks ago in New York. I just sent that video to him last week. You say that we don't care, but we do care. We do. It matters to us. But what we're talking about right now is unarmed civilians being killed by law enforcement.
Lock, stock, and barrel, I couldn't agree with you more. But what I'm saying is that there is, again, this is from my perspective. You're saying you sent a video to it personally. No one heard about that. You're telling me now. I didn't hear about that on the radio. I didn't hear about
and scream from the rafters that he sent this video to the kid?
But here's the thing, and we appreciate the phone call. Here's the thing. I think that, you know, what this all boils down to is that, you know, as a police officer, to sit here and say that, you know, no one cares when a police officer loses his life in the line of duty, I think that's ridiculous. We all care. And we all, you know, understand the sacrifice that these men and women make. But there is risk and danger involved with being a police officer. the point I think, you know, Canty is making is that, you know, Chris Canty walking down the street, it doesn't feel like he should be taking on any inherent danger or risk just walking down the street. But that's not how he feels. He could be in a park, you know, bird watching. I mean, like, we already saw that video.
Yeah, we've seen that.
That's not how it should be. There should be no, I mean, he's not signed up to have inherent risk because he's black. Unarmed and black should not be a risky proposition for him.
And unfortunately, but that's where we are. Yeah, it's terrible.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.